It's the Score North Twin Show.
Hey, let's fire it up here, boys. Let's fire it up. That's right. Eight in a row. Eight in a row. For the first time since Trevor Plouffe's 2011 team.
That vaunted 2011 Dude, Twins, yeah.
That's the wildest season because you guys lost 99 games. We've talked about it. But you were also the best team in baseball for like 2 months. You went from 20 games below 500 to like 5 games below 500 in a 2 month stretch, including however many wins in a row. So not since that season has a Twins team been this red hot and impossible to beat, Trevor.
Unbelievable. I want to go back to, I don't know, 2 weeks ago and see how we opened the show. Definitely wasn't like that with you dancing with your Homer hanky. And
when Provis told you last night on the telecast, the last time this team won 8 games, your response was priceless. Didn't we lose 99 that season?
I tried to put that season in a rearview mirror, and then all of a sudden he brings that stat out. And I was like, either I wasn't up for that because I wasn't up that entire season, or I just completely have forgotten about it.
Yeah, it's in the dark corners of our Twins memory.
Sheesh, man.
So we got Plouffe is out in Chicago right now. You've been on this road trip, and you're in a beautiful hotel here middle of the day on this Tuesday. But I feel like we should start the show with Judd here apologizing to Carlos Santana. So, Judd, if you would like to apologize publicly for wanting Carlos Santana DFA'd last week, the floor is yours to do the right thing. Go ahead.
You know, you tried this last night on X, and I will reiterate, you tried to get me to apologize throughout the summer of Bundy, the Dylan Bundy year, because I said this isn't going to work, and you're like, every time he'd have a good start, and occasionally he would. So, you know what? I will withhold apology, but I will say this. Carlos Santana clearly heard the critics.
The motivation.
And he has delivered. The motivational coach. Motivational coach.
That's what he needed. Yeah, he's been in the league for 20 years.
This guy, Zolgad's really down on you. You better show something. And between me and the rally sausage, we got this thing on track. Not in that order.
I don't want to, like, you know, bring you down at all because I feel like you're riding a nice high, feeling confident about yourself. I don't think Carlos Santana heard what you had to say.
No.
Just going to throw that out.
Sorry, Judd.
You don't think he subscribes to the YouTube channel? YouTube?
He should. It's a brand new YouTube channel.
Yeah,
I'm going to tell him today, get on the YouTube and subscribe right now.
Thank you very much, Trev.
But he's not cooked. Clearly, he's not cooked. He just needed, you know, sometimes when you're 38 years old, you're playing in a cold weather city, you just got to. You need like 2.5 weeks for the body to warm up. I think maybe that's what happened.
Hey, nobody was hitting Garrett Crochet last night, and he just happened to slider it out of the ballpark. So that was – I don't know. I still don't know what happened with Crochet, why they took him out of the game. I don't know if something's come out about an injury. I don't think it's an injury. He retired 11 hits in a row. He was looking absolutely filthy, and all of a sudden he was out of the game. I was like, this is great for the Twins.
Yeah.
They took him out, I guess, pitch count. And
77 pitches?
And he was pissed. He said, I understand what they're doing in trying to protect me, but I could help, and he's right, the bullpen. The White Sox did the Twins a solid again. That's what it comes down to. Thank you very much, White Sox.
God, it's brutal. Hey, Plouffe, I when these Twins hitters are just like hitting as good as they are, which is they're leading the league in OPS, everyone's firing. Kyle Farmer's coming back from the dead. Carlos Santana's having a great week. Everyone is hitting. As like you're going into your approach each game, knowing that you're just like smoking the ball, like does your adjustment at the plate change, or do you wait for the opposition to adjust before you start making changes? Because obviously when things are working so well, like you're probably not going to the drawing board and trying to fix things. Like, how do you adjust and continue to keep raking like the Twins have been over a course of a week plus?
I think a lot of people romanticize about adjustments in the game and like, hey, like it's not going right. We need to make some adjustments. And sometimes that does come into play. If you got a guy, you know, just mechanically screwed up, and there's something that needs to be fixed, some sort of timing mechanism or some hitch, like you can find yourself making an adjustment. But for the most part, you're just going to continue with your routine throughout the season. Now, you might change something in your routine up, whether that's, hey, I'm gonna see curveballs today off the machine, or hey, I'm gonna watch some velo so to train my eyes a little bit before the game. Like, you might do something like that. It might just be a mental adjustment. Hey, like, let's go attack in hitters counts a little bit more. Let's not be passive in those counts. Let's go be aggressive. If we chase a little bit, who cares? But I think for the most part, you're going to stick to your routine, because it's the truth. I mean, it's 162 games. Like, you're going to be crappy for a week or 2 weeks or a month. And then you're going to be really good for a week or 2 weeks or a month. And then the rest of the time, you're just going to kind of be figuring out. It's like pitchers always say, I can have my best stuff for 7 starts, my worst stuff for 7 starts, and whatever I do in between, that's kind of my season. It's kind of the same for hitters. So I don't think there's been massive adjustments made. I think number one, we saw some lesser competition, and you know, maybe the confidence comes back. I think that's the biggest thing. And you just need a little bit of confidence, and then that kind of rolls over. But as far as like real adjustments being made, I don't know how many have actually been made. I think it's more of a byproduct of just a really long season, and we're hitting a hot streak. So I want to temper fans' expectations as well. Like, it's not always going to be this good. Like, right, we're going to be bad.
What are you talking about? What do you mean? Trevor?
Hey, Floof, that's my role. Don't you step on my role. My role is to temper expectations and bring fans down.
Like, there's going to be another stretch of games where it just looks like the Twins don't know what they're doing. And there's going to be another stretch of games after this where it's like, hey, no one can beat the Twins. So, like, it's just a long season. And for the offense to struggle out of the gate the way they had, it just becomes more kind of glaring than it would be if it was during the middle of the season. But these guys go to work every single day. The hitting coaches are going to work every single day. They always put in the work in. There's never a time where a big league player is just not doing anything, especially nowadays. I mean, they have these guys locked in all the time.
So this is a week for you, in addition to your regular John Boy podcast, where you have the big boy capital J journalism suit and tie on, and you're reporting for Bally Sports North. So with your journalistic expertise, what can you tell us about the rally sausage? What have we found out about? I worry about like a salmonella outbreak in the clubhouse at some point being the reason why they missed the playoffs, but what have you found out?
I've learned a lot about sausages over the last few days, like stuff I didn't think I'd ever need to know. But so it's a summer sausage, which means it's cured or there's lots of preservatives. It doesn't need to be refrigerated. So I think it's still okay as far as that aspect. Now, it's been like kind of just like sitting around. It does not look appetizing whatsoever.
Is it in the wrapping still?
Still in the wrapper. Okay. I think I also learned that about summer sausage. Once it's out of the wrapper, you probably need to like refrigerate it or consume it within a couple of days, but it's still wrapped up. But the thing that's happened is, like, you know, first of all, love that the team's rallying around it. It's been a lot of fun. But there's been like companies reaching out now. They want to be the official sausage.
Of course. Oh, yeah.
So it's become like, you know, Dustin Morse is like licking his chops. Like, all right, I got my PR stuff going on.
So we got Hormel, Kramarchuk, and Schweigert. They're all just circling like sharks right now.
Yeah, they love it, man. And then guess what? All of a sudden, I don't want to put this out there, but like I said, eventually the Homer sausage is not going to be a thing. So let's just ride it as long as we can.
I was going to say that's the key question that I have not seen addressed yet. Will any sausage do? Or is it this particular sauce? Like that's the slippery slope on which, because if I come, you know, if I bring the Twins, if I'm the sponsor now, right? And I bring here's 50 sausages. Jeffers might be like, no, dude.
It's the wrong kind of sausage. There's cheese used in this one. That's not.
Or just this was the sausage. I mean, it's like my dog. I love my dog. I don't want a different dog. You can't just replace my dog.
I think you got to keep this one. And like, you know, it's Kyle Farmer's sausage. You know, he had a deal with the company that sent him this sausage. So I feel like you almost got to give them the business.
Yeah.
You can't switch the sausage up. If that's your question. No, you.
Yeah.
Another sausage will not suffice.
It's also kind of a genius move by Kyle Farmer, who's been a really good utility player for this team. But, you know, he's hitting 111 right now. And, yeah, there's some roster moves. But if you are essentially the front man and the connector of the rallying cry in the clubhouse, like, your roster spot is pretty safe, I feel like, for at least a few months.
I feel like that's part of his role, though, really. As a veteran, you know, sometimes you got to loosen the boys up. Sometimes you got, you know, there's just certain roles you have to play. Now, you want to produce on the field, and I believe Kyle will. he's a guy that could actually make a physical adjustment, and we could see him working on different things. I talked to him a little bit. He said he wanted to bring his hands down a little lower. That's where he feels most athletic. So I think he's made that adjustment. But you're right. I mean, he is. He's the guy in the middle of things in the clubhouse for sure. Keeping the vibes high.
Speaking of that too, Trevor, I talked to Jeffers. This was, I think, going in after game three of the White Sox series last week, going into game four. And I wanted to pick his brain a little bit about his exit velo, because his exit velo is like towards the bottom of the league, which is interesting to me for someone that's a really productive and a strong guy too. It's not like this is some random guy that's hitting singles. This dude can hit the ball all over the place. He can put it over the fence. And I asked him about, like, why do you think like your exit velo is so low? And he also joked that last year, I think Jeffers had the hardest hit ball on the Twins last season too. So like, even though his exit velo is typically lower and the coaching staff kind of wants him to hit the ball a little bit harder, he just is like, he explained it to me, like, I'm a professional hitter. Like, I know where to put the ball, so I can sacrifice exit velo if it means I can put the ball where I want it to put it. And then on Thursday in that series finale, smacks one like 113 off the bat over the fence for a big home run. So I guess my question to you is, like, how often do players really like get obsessed with like exit velocity and the new age statistics, when at the end of the day, like, guys like Jeffers can just be really damn good hitters no matter what the thing's coming off the bat?
I think most hitters just cherry pick the stats that they're good at, you know? So for Jeffers, he's hit a few balls hard. 112, I think, is his max exit velo this year, and he's averaging 84. He'll probably get back up to around 89, 90, which is like league average. But what I've seen from him is like, he's made two strike adjustments, and he'll like try to put the ball in play with two strikes. He'll, you know, the front leg is never super high with him, but there are times where he'll keep it even lower and sacrifice some of that power to have a good at bat. So I think that's probably where some of that's coming from. On the contrary, like Christian Vasquez, his exit velo is great. Like he's hitting the ball very hard, but the results haven't shown up on the field necessarily yet. I mean, he started to come around the last week or so. But I think that Jeffers, I think he's turning into like an all around, like just a really good hitter, like an actually good Major League Baseball hitter, and not just a good hitter for a catcher, like a good hitter in baseball. And sometimes the good ones will sacrifice exit velo because they want to put the ball in play in certain situations. They want to drive in the run. They want to just have a good productive at bat. And I think that's what we've seen Jeffers do early on in the season.
Are there, even in like the last 20 years, just go back to like when you were coming up and first round pick, how much different is the preparation process with all the different information that's available now that maybe wasn't in like the early 2000s? Like, what matters, what doesn't, what's different from really not that long ago when like Target Field opened up and we're talking like early 2000s?
I don't think a lot of the preparation has changed. I think just a lot of the information that you receive has changed. So maybe that changes, you know, some things that you value.
Like, what, you know, do what I mean? And like, don't you want to know as a hitter, I guess?
Me personally, or like the guys now?
Either way.
I think for me, we were still getting packets of information when I played. Now it's just changed, and I think it's been simplified now. There's maybe more information, but it's presented better. You know, when we were there, it was just a ton of like raw numbers, and you just kind of had to sift through them. Now it's color coded, and you know, they've tried to simplify it as, you know, the information has come, and it's like, okay, well, these guys, players didn't really grow up with this, so let's just try to present it to them in a way where we can all understand it together. So in some instances, I think the information has been simplified a little bit. But I always just like to look at like what pitchers threw. Okay, I know what your repertoire is, but when do you throw certain pitches? And you look for outliers, 2-1 count, or after he throws this sequence, you know, this pitch is coming 70% of the time. Like if you could find numbers like that, that's something I would keep in my head, because you find yourself in those situations and you could have a pretty good guess at what's coming. I mean, that's when you start to have an advantage over a pitcher. I think nowadays guys are really, I think maybe probably more so than ever, looking at the underlying numbers, like which I think helps a hitter. Like if you're looking up at the Jumbotron and you're Christian Vasquez and you're hitting, you know, a buck whatever, but you're understanding, hey, I'm hitting the ball hard. Like that tells you to keep having the confidence in what you're doing. Like the hits will eventually come. So I think a lot of guys nowadays will look at those numbers and say, look, things are going to happen for me sooner than later. But also the same token, we just talked about Jeffers. He's looking at the numbers on Jumbotron saying, like, I'm the man. I don't care about my underlying numbers. So yeah. Hitters just want the numbers that support whatever tells them that they're doing well.
I remember, I think it was Perk, like probably 2012, and he was actually showing me just off the record at the time, like, because I was curious, like, what information do you guys get? What do you use? And he literally like pulls out one of these packets and he's kind of going through it and he says, so I have all the hitters that we're facing in the series and what their numbers are against me in different situations. And he was explaining like some of these sample sizes make it hard anyways, but he pointed out, I can't remember which hitter it was, but it was, this hitter is 5 for 21 off of me or 5 for 18 or whatever it was. And he goes, but that's not really that helpful because what his batting average against me is less relevant than did he make actual good contact? Did he have, if he had 3 bloops, well, I won those matchups. Yes. So I feel like it's more about, now we're getting like way in the weeds here, but it's more about like batted ball data process than it is like, what's your batting average off of a pitcher in a small sample size or something.
Well, those are predictive stats. I mean, that's going to tell you like, what you think the outcome's going to happen or what should happen, I guess. So a lot of pitchers like those. I mean, I think the biggest pitcher stat is FIP. They want to get rid of the, any outliers in fielding and whatnot. So that, I know Glenn loves that stat. Probably more than anything.
So FIP is strikeouts. It's what you can control, right? Strikeout fielding, rate, walk rate,
yep.
Fielding independent pitching.
Independent pitching, yeah.
And it's strikeout rate, walk rate, and then I got to hit the baseball sounder for what I'm about to say here.
Baseball!
And then for traditional FIP, it's home run rate, but for ex-FIP, it's ground ball fly ball ratio, meaning like the more ground balls you can generate, the better you're going to have a chance to get someone out. For instance, yes.
Again, you could find any stat to support you're doing
baseball.
It right,
or you could probably find any stat just that splattering off the wall.
Well, no, but my whole thing is that also does not replace your own what you're comfortable with and your own intelligence. If you're a dumb athlete, it ain't going to help you. And if you're smart, it's going to help you because you can sort through it. Like I think that's the problem, especially with athletes, about providing reams of information. They need to do what they're comfortable with. It's like Molitor would have been great in any era as far as his baseball smarts, right? And so like now with more information, it might help him because he could sort through it, but he knows how. Hey, back to Vasquez. So he joined you, Latroy, and Provis postgame on Sunday, and I thought he had a very interesting comment in talking about how things have changed in the past week or so. And he said, we made adjustments and we're putting the ball in play. And Rocco expanded that on the post game, especially off that Angel series, and said, we had really good at bats and we're hitting line drives. How much have you seen, speaking of adjustments, a change in philosophy? It does look like the at bats, like there was some type of, I don't know, conversation or a realization among some guys that the quality of the at-bats had to improve. And there does seem to be less of an emphasis as the strikeouts have declined on possibly trying to hit for power and just trying to put the ball in play more.
You know what's going to cause that is, losing. When you start losing baseball games, you start looking, in the mirror a lot more. So, the Twins were striking out too much. They weren't having great at-bats with runners in scoring position in general. And I think that's when you start to put it to a hitter like that, like, hey, like some of these at-bats, we just have to dumb it down a little bit. We just have to put the ball in play at some times. And again, I said that last week on the show, like, it's not like every hitter is going up there trying to hit a home run every single bat because the pitchers just won't allow that to happen. There are certain times you can take a big swing, but there's also like, there is adjustments that you can make as a hitter, and everyone's done it, their entire life. Like you can shorten your stride up, you can spread out a little bit, you can, whatever you do to be able to see the ball a little bit better, you can make that adjustment. All these big league hitters have more than one swing. Like you have your A swing, you should have a good two strike approach. You should have a swing that, if you don't see a pitcher particularly well, like you have another swing for that. And a lot of that has to do with like your load and your setup and all that. So I think when you start losing and you start saying, well, what we're not getting these runners in with scoring position. When we get these guys on base, we're not getting them in. And what are we doing in those situations? Oh, we're striking out, or, you know, we're getting a little too big. We're trying to hit the 3-run homer instead of maybe moving the runner over, or just trying to find outfield grass. Like those are the adjustments. They actually can come pretty easily to big league hitters if you want to do them. You have to want to collectively do that as a team. Say, hey, we're just going to really bear down on these at-bats. And so you get presented that. And then I also think if you get presented with the information saying we're chasing too much, there's too many balls out of the zone, we're swinging, we're being a little too aggressive, you can start to really hone your strike zone in. But you have to go through some losing to do that. And they did.
So were you surprised at all, Trev? It was a tough decision, and they're going to make some more really tough decisions here, even probably within the next couple hours, and even when Topa also comes back, too. Were you surprised that it was Austin Martin that went down? I mean, I know Jose Miranda definitely out-hit him over the last week or so, but it felt like Martin gave them a different style in how they approach things a little bit. He's a little bit more of a small ball guy. He can work counts really well, good defensive flexibility. Great hair, great locks that go all the way down. Were you a little surprised to see him be the guy that was the odd man out with, obviously, Correa coming back from the IL?
I think so. I thought it was between Miranda and him. I think they saw Willie Castro and Austin Martin in the same vein a little bit, where, you know, Willie stepped in and played shortstop, did it really well. He also can play outfield and you know, he's can play center field if need be. So I think it really was like, okay, we have a guy like this already. And the fact that Jose Miranda was hitting the ball, and they can't really send Kyle Farmer down. I think he does have an option, but like, I don't really think that's a possibility to send him down.
No, because now you're sending the sausage down, you know, it becomes a problem.
Yeah. So like, I really believe it was just the fact that Miranda has put up some good at bats over the last week, which is crazy to me because we don't really, you know, delve in small sample sizes nowadays. And for this particular roster move, I kind of think they did.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I was just the fact that Miranda's, you know, he's
seriously though,
had some extra base hits, just better at bats overall, and I think they wanted to continue that and keep that going.
Austin Martin, it's a little bit throwback because it's been a while for the Twins since we've seen guys who make contact, put the ball in play, steal second base, you know, move over on a sack fly.
Yeah, I liked it.
It hasn't been the approach like the Bomba Squad Twins from 2019. But it's a lever they can pull at some point if they're just looking for a spark, somebody to come in. And I mean, we've kind of compared this slow start in some ways and then the 8-game winning streak to the 2006 Twins. Also were like 8 games below 500 early in the process. And then they made a couple switches. They put Nick Punto at third base in place of Tony Bautista, I think, was on his last leg. And then Juan Castro was the starting shortstop veteran who was with the Reds, and they put Bartlett at short, and they just rolled with like these contact hitting piranhas, as they were coined. So there's something about just putting the ball in play and moving around the bay. I hope to see Austin Martin back up, I guess, is my long winded point here.
I think if Farmer had better statistics and they were more comfortable like starting him at third base on a consistent basis, then it might have been Miranda to go down and kept Austin up. But I think they want Miranda starting at third base right now for the most part.
Yeah.
Because the at-bats he's had.
He's your boy, right?
Yeah, I love him.
Kyle is, you guys go out and eat together, and he's like, like, I mean, this is...
Are you stalking their Instagrams? Or wait?
Don't no, I say it all the time. It's me. Yeah, it's me.
They talk about it constantly. There's two things. You and Kyle are boys, and you don't like the term "muscled the ball."
I hate that term.
When pros,
I hate when they like, say "don't ever jam."
What's the right? I mean, well, Chip Carey says "fisted," and that makes people uncomfortable. So, what is the jam okay. shot? Like, what are we supposed to say?
Yeah, you got jammed and blooped over the second baseman's head. You didn't muscle anything, dude.
Like, but muscling gives you like, more credit as a hitter. It's like, yes.
Yeah, like I'm so exercise. Strong that even though I got jammed, I hit it. It's like, that is not the case whatsoever. Like, you got jammed, you hit it on the wrong part of the bat, and like you got lucky. So like when people say you muscled, I'm like, does everybody just have massive muscles? Like everyone's the same, like, you know, level of strength. Like I, it's just not the case.
So but would you, if pro,
I don't care that much. It's just kind of a,
it was just good though. Cause Corey said, it's true. Said that, and you're like, dude, that no, don't use that again.
Yeah. That's what I see is Provis now as a play by play guy. I want to hear him take what you just said and say, oh, there's a really lucky bloop over the head of the shortstop there. It's a lucky hit for Kyle Farmer today.
It does, like, yeah, it does sound better for the hitter to say, oh, I had muscled that one out there. But you're never going to hear a hitter say, you guys see me muscle that one over there? You
just hey,
say,
guys.
See me freaking sneak one in there? That was sick.
And Corey hates high sky, right?
I think everyone does, yes.
Okay. I didn't know if you did,
but
didn't.
It's so true.
The high sky.
It's true, people. Yes. Like, there are times where it's much more difficult to judge a fly ball. And that's when I would say it's called a high sky. When you have no clouds out there and it's a certain color and time of the day, there's a difference. There's a difference in skies. I'm telling you that. Nobody wants to believe me. I know the sky isn't moving or whatever. But if I also say this all the time, there's a reason they call it Big Sky Montana. So
right.
You go to Montana, it looks different.
It looks different it over does. There. You're it's right. The,
yeah, so.
Anyway, play ball
I'm a
game,
Montana true, native here.
Yeah.
I do think we should. I think, you know, I'm just going through here during the show. Where does the rally sausage rank in terms of all the different rallying cries that we've had in recent years? So I'm making a list. We have the rally sausage. We had mm-hmm. the fishing jacket home run celebration
last year.
Yep.
The robe.
The robe
great.
Is a great
I
one.
Love
the robe
was
nice, by the way. I like the robe.
I would put the post game clubhouse dance parties with Torrey Hunter.
Yeah. Those are
in
awesome.
The conversation.
Smoke machines, yeah.
There's the smell 'em from like 15 years ago, or you've hit RBI. Smell those RBIs.
Smell 'em was good.
It was a good one. Is it cracking the Mount Rushmore here? Is the question.
It's got a lot of legs, man. The sausage thing is really taken off. Rocco gave a hilarious answer. That's kind of why. And I was, you know, Betsy, who, you know, covers the Twins for, I don't even know who she covers the Twins for.
Pioneer
does a great
Press,
job
right?
Doing
Twin
it. Pioneer yeah. Press. Yeah. She asked the question, and I was like, Betsy, we're trying to be professional here, and then you're trying to talk about sausages. She goes, I can't believe. She goes, I texted my friend saying, my company just paid me all this money to travel to Chicago and ask the manager about a sausage. And I was
right.
Like,
here we are.
Love it.
Do what you got to do.
It's a long season.
Do what you got to do. So does the sausage travel in Jeffers' like normal bag, a catching bag? Because I heard he's in charge of the actual transportation of said sausage.
It should be in like its own. You know how people carry around like their pool cues or whatever. Oh, like yeah. It should be in its
like
own
a case.
Yeah, like a, yeah, like case. A yeah, musical yes. case or something.
Oh. I think this sausage has had a glow up. I mean, initially it was just on the streets, sitting on a table. Nobody wanted to eat it. This thing was cast away. It was like, hey, get away. It was, just not really part of society. Then all of a sudden it's become like a thing of kings. Like, I think it is going, I think initially it was just thrown in a bag and then it was just whatever here it is. Now we might see it get like a golden chariot, like you're talking about. Like someone's gonna get a bag specifically, and it's gonna have its own seat and all that thing. It's had the glow up.
When it's all said and done, I believe that it should be encased at Target Field, like with all the other mementos that the Twins have. Bobbleheads, programs.
Yeah, that squirrel that ran around the first year at Target.
That was awesome.
That's right.
Go, the nervous squirrel.
I forgot about the squirrel.
If the Twins sweep the next two games, and then all of a sudden in this span of games that we all collectively said was a season-defining stretch of games, if they go 11-0 in those games, is that what it can be? Or 10-0?
If you go back to the Tigers,
four,
series,
4-3 would be 10-0.
Yeah,
10-0.
Yeah, sorry,
10-0 on this must win stretch. Then yes, I'm saying it should go in one of those cases in the back and like the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Not the Hall of Fame, the Twins, yeah, the Twins
Peter, get on
memorabilia room, whatever that is.
Kirby,
definitely
Puckett,
not in the Hall of Fame. We're not there yet.
The golden seat from Game 6, Kirby Puckett.
Yep,
next to. whatever, like Burt
Blyleven's
Hall of Fame ring, and then the summer sausage,
the sausage of 24, the summer of 24 sausage.
man.
What a time to be
it's
alive.
Something else.
Man. Yeah. So, well, Trev, we got to let you go roam the streets of Chicago for some lunch here before your Bally's duties continue. But we appreciate your on-the-ground reporting here from the Windy City. And we'll see if the Twins can keep the winning streak alive.
Yeah, let's go. I'll see you guys next Tuesday.
Yes, sir.
Sounds good, dude. Awesome. Trevor Plouffe Tuesdays here on the Score North Twin Show. Click that like button, subscribe button on their YouTube channel, 5-star rating, positive review on Apple and Spotify. We'll see you guys. All right, nice. Dude.
Thanks, Trev.